Shabbos Shalom, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Kuf Samech Dalet, and we are picking up on Kuf Samech Dalet. So the Gemara says, well, we're picking up with Meisve. It's a 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down from the top. So the Gemara says the following. So also remember again, we just left off with the statement of Rav, where Rav essentially said that the Eidim cannot sign on an erased part, unless, of course, the erasure took place in front of them. Only once the Eidim see the erasure, do the Eidim have the ability to sign on the document. So Rav's point is, hopefully, that people won't abuse the erasures and potentially go ahead and sign and re-sign. Or I should say, write and rewrite. So Meisve, the Gemara raises the kasha. Hu al aniyar ve'edav al hamachak. So we'll say, what about the following case? Let's say the text of the document is on regular parchment, in other words, unerased parchment, ve'idav ala machak, but the witnesses are signed on an erased piece of parchment. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Kasher. So the document is kasher. I v'nechosh dilma machikle, v'kasev my deboy. But why aren't we concerned that perhaps the document will be erased, right? The owner of the document will erase the document, rewrite what he wants on the document, and ultimately forge it. Uksiv my deboy. Vahabilehu ve'edav ala machak. Now, we'll say again, remember, in this case, the document itself is written on the unerased piece of parchment. The witnesses are signed on the erased piece of parchment. Therefore, if you just erase the text, then both will look the same. Then ultimately both will be on erased parchment and one could get away with a forgery, to which the Gemara says, Viksibi hachi, because we'll say they write the following on the shtar. Anachna sahadi chasamna amachko, vishtara kasav al naira. So we'll say the Gemara says, because what's the case? The case is where the witnesses write on the actual document, we, the witnesses, have signed on the erased part, but the shtar itself was written on regular, unerased parchment. To which the Gemara says, so we'll say, writing that line in ensures that no one could go ahead and forge the document, because at the end of the day, the witnesses are explicitly saying that the document was originally written on unerased parchment. To which the Gemara says, well, the chsid hecha, where exactly is this line being written? Imila tachos, if it's being written underneath the signatures of the witnesses, so gaizle, it could easily be cut away. In other words, you could just cut off that bottom line. Iiloi, and if it's written above the signatures of the witnesses, machikle, why can't you erase it? Because after all, again, Rabbosei, remember again, you could just say that that was part of the erased part of the shtar, to which the Gemara answers, dechsivi bein sahada l'sahada. This line is written in between the signatures of the witnesses. And as well say, interestingly enough, so in this kind of case, where the shtar is written on what we'll call regular parchment, the Eidim sign on erased parchment. So the failsafe, or I should say, the forgery prevention clause is, in between the signatures of the witnesses, there's a line that says, we, the witnesses, signed on erased parchment. The text of the document was written on regular parchment, and because that line is written in between the signatures, really it's tamper-proof. You can't do anything with it, because if you try to erase it, it'll be discernible. If you try to blot it out, it's discernible. To which the Gemara says, Ihaki, if that's the case, Emo Seifa. Look at the end of that braisa. What's the end of the braisa? Hu al hamachak ve'edav al aniyar. We'll say, what about the flip case? Let's say the document itself was written on the erased part of the shtar, and the witnesses signed on unerased parchment. So what's the halacha? We'll say, so again, in this case, document itself on erased parchment, witnesses sign on unerased parchment. What's the halacha? Puzzle. The braisa ruled that it's puzzle. My puzzle, I don't understand why is it puzzle in this case. After all, again, Hachet nami nichtivu hachi, anachno sahadi chasamna al naira, ushtara amachka. Why can't the Eidim just simply write in between their signatures, we, the witnesses, signed on unerased parchment, but the document itself was written on erased parchment, to which the Gemara says, my Amrit, what are you worried about? Mochek v'chozer u'mochek. Are you concerned about the fact that perhaps what? That perhaps we will go ahead and erase the shtar, meaning erase the shtar, and go ahead and re-sign. Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Rashbam says, Hashtanami, Chozer od umochek umezayif, Umakshinon ha'amrit inodome. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the Gemara says, "My amrit, what are you concerned about in this case?" Rabbi says, "Remember, this is the reverse of the previous case. In this case, the shtar is being written on the erased part, on the erased part of the document, and witnesses are signing." Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. And witnesses are signing on the unerased part. So what are you worried about? Are you worried about that since the document is being written on an erased part of the shtar, therefore what? Somebody is going to erase it a second time and rewrite it again. So we already talk about that. The Gemara says, Ha'amrit inodom nimchak pamachos l'nimchak shtei pamim. We don't have to worry about that. Why not? Because we already established yesterday, bro, say that what? That a document that was erased once looks differently than a document erased twice. You heard the Gemara asking over here. In this case, Rabbi Osai, the document is being written on the erased part of the parchment, and the witnesses are signing on the unerased part of the parchment. So yet the Braisa says that such a document is puzzle. We want to try to understand why not. What are you concerned about? If you're concerned that since the text of the document is already written on an erased piece of parchment, so it's easy enough for someone to what? Re-erase it a second time and rewrite whatever they want. So the Gemara says you can't do that because you've already established that a document that's been erased twice looks different than a document erased once. So if it's erased twice, people can already detect the forgery. To which the Gemara says, no. Hani mili. They will say, when do we say that you can tell the difference between a first-time erasure and a second-time erasure? Hecha dechasimi sahadi amachga. They will say, that's when the witnesses themselves have signed on the erased part. However, Hecha delocha simi sadi amachga ela anaira lo yedir. This is actually very interesting. What the Gemara essentially answers is the following. When can you tell the difference between a first erasure and a second erasure? When you're looking at them side by side. Side by side. So for example, if let's say the whole document was erased and then they rewrote it, text and then signatures, and then somebody went ahead and once again erased the text and rewrote the text, then Lemaisa, you'd be able to contrast the two erasures on the same document. But I will say, you can't tell if something has been erased once or twice by comparing it to unerased parchment. So in this case over here, where the top part of the parchment has been erased once, document's been written on it, then witnesses sign on the unerased part, bottom part of the parchment, and now somebody comes along and would technically erase the document and write a second time again on it, by contrasting the top part and the second part of the document, you would not be able to tell if the second part's been erased once or twice. The only time you could tell a first erasure versus a second erasure is when you're comparing them side by side. To which the Gemara says, that's why the Braisa rules that this document would ultimately be invalid. Why? Because you really would not be able to detect the forgery. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. V'laisi megilta achresi, v'limchok v'lidmi. I don't understand. It's easy enough. If you're concerned that on this document, Rabbi will say that perhaps it was erased a second time. So just bring another piece of parchment, erase it once, compare this piece of parchment that's been erased once to the document. If they look the same, then you can tell the document's not a forgery. It's only been the parchment's only been erased once. If the parchment's been erased twice, however, it'll look different than that other piece of one-time erased parchment, and you'll be able to tell the forgery. To which the Gemara says, "Lo dami machka dahaymi gilta lemachka dahaymi gilta." To which the Gemara answers that you cannot compare erasures. If you take a look at the Rashbam, it's almost, if you go across in the Rashbam about five lines up, lemachka dahaymi gilta ze'av v'zedak umachak shoklaf av ino nikar kolkach. They both say parchments, especially again in the times of the Gemara. Rabbi say everything was done by hand, right? There are no machines to aid in these processes. So we'll say at the end of the day, each piece of parchment looks different. Some are thicker, some are thinner, which means that by definition, every erasure looks different. So to go ahead and take a one-time erased piece of parchment and compare it to the document and try to tell, has the document been erased once or has the document been erased twice? Lemais, again, that's not going to work. To which the Gemara says, Ula kablo, listen to this. Ula kablo chasimos yada de sahadi bebedina. Belimchok v'lidmi. So the Gemara has a very interesting answer, we'll say. Remember again, what's the case here? The case over here is that we have a piece of parchment. The top part's been erased. The bottom part has never been erased. The text of the document is written on the one-time erased piece of parchment. The Edim are signing on the never-erased piece of parchment. What we are concerned about, the Brisa, what the Brisa is concerned about in this case is that somebody could come along. So the Brisa rules that such a document is possible. Why? Because the Brisa rules that it can be easily forged. How could it be easily forged? Since the top part has already been erased once, somebody could come and erase it again, rewrite what they want, and utilize the signatures of the witnesses. So the Gemara is trying to figure out, because why? Because the Gemara assumes you will not be able to tell by contrasting the top with the bottom if it's been erased once or been erased twice. So we're trying to figure out how you could detect a forgery. So attempt number one was to try to bring in another piece of parchment, erase it once, compare it to the document. Do the two erasures look the same? That would prove it's a one-time erasure. The Gemara says it doesn't work because different pieces of parchment erase in different ways. To which the Gemara says, I'll give you a different etzah. The different etzah is, uphold the signatures of the witnesses. Do chasimas yedea edim. Uphold the signatures of the witnesses. In other words, so establish their signatures, then what? Erase them. In other words, after you've already ascertained that these signatures are legitimate, the witnesses are good, erase the signatures. What do you then do when you erase the signatures, Rav Osai? Now you have a document that is fully erased. What will you be easy? What will you be able to tell relatively quickly? You're going to compare the bottom of the document to the top of the document. If they look the same, then that proves the top of the document has what? Only been erased once. If they don't look the same, then Lamaisa, that proves that the top of the document has been erased more than once. To which the Gemara says, Am Rav Hoshi, you can't do that. Because Eino Nimchak, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Unekabel chasimas yadaihu bebeidina, shelo yafsid balashtar edo shaleidav, va'achakach nimchak v'nichtov v'himegilta gufa v'nedamya. In other words, make sure you uphold the signatures, so that Beis Din knows the signatures are legitimate, then erase them, and compare the erasure on the bottom of the shtar to the erasure on the top of the shtar. To which the Gemara says, it won't work. I'll tell you what, Am Rav Hoshi, Eino Doma Nimchak Ben Yomo, Lenimchak Bein Shnei Yamim. Because Rav Osai, you cannot compare a document that has been erased today to a document that's been erased a few days ago. So I guess, I don't know, different factors, I guess, have an impact upon the nature, the tzura, the look of the parchments. So apparently, again, the oxidation with the erasure and everything else somehow makes the document look different. So the idea that the Gemara is saying over here is that the bottom erasure may or may not look the same as the top erasure, but that may have nothing to do with the fact that the top erasure may be potentially a fraudulent second erasure, but rather may just have to do with the fact that this was done today, this was done a few days ago. I belishay. So if that's the case, that you're concerned about age, erase the bottom of the document and let the document sit a little bit, and there is, you know, over time they'll be able to tell if the two erasures look the same. On Rabbi Yair said no. Chayshin on the Beis Din Toin. We're concerned again of a Beis Din who's going to make a mistake. In other words, that in these kinds of situations, we prefer to rule immediately and not to let things sit. Because the more you let things sit, the more the possibility and potential ultimately for some type of error. So we'll say, so bottom line, what the Gemara suggests to advise. So what do we come out with from this sugya? Number one, we come out with the sheet of Rav. And Rav says that any time someone is asked to witness or to sign on a document with erasures, you can only do that if the erasures were done in front of you. If the erasures were not done in front of you, better not to sign on to such a document because it opens up the possibility for fraud. We've also now established on both sides that if you have a situation where the document was written on erased parchment, witnesses sign on regular parchment, so the failsafe to prevent the document is written on regular parchment, witnesses sign on erased parchment, so again, the Gemara suggests the witnesses put in a little statement in between their signatures, going ahead and highlighting the fact that Lemaisa, they have signed on erased part, and the document was written on unerased part. If it's the reverse, that the witnesses are signing on the unerased part and the document is written on the erased part, the Gemara says such a shtar will be puzzle. Why will such a shtar be puzzle? Because Rabbi Osai, there really is no way to prevent fraud in that case. There's no way to prevent someone from coming along a second time and erasing the text, rewriting something, and utilizing the signatures of the witnesses. And because there is no way to prevent against fraud in that type of document, Chazal passed that type of document. Fine. We'll say two lines off of the bottom. Kuf Samech Dalet Amud Aleph. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer B'Kusha. So we'll remember again, we saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said that you could go ahead, M'Kusha Shekasvu Eidav Mitocho, Kosher, B'Mnei Shiachol HaSosel Pashit. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said, we'll say that one of the ways in which we contrasted a get mekusher versus a get pashat is how that a get mekusher, the witnesses sign on the front of the document, the side of the text. Get mekusher, that's a get pashat. Get mekusher, they sign on the back. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said that if you have a get mekusher where the witnesses signed on the front of the document itself is still valid. Why? Why? Because you can make it into a pashat. You can just simply make it into a regular document. So says the Gemara. Heishiv Rabbi, the Rabbi, the Divrei Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. So we'll say Rabbi, if Rabbi went ahead and raised the question, literally Heishiv means he tried to refute the position of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Look at the last Rashi Bam Rabbi said on the page before you turn the page. Heishiv Rabbi, the Divrei Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Shomer Mekusher Yochalas also Pashit. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel who said that you can make a Mekusher into a Pashit, Rabbi came along and tried to refute this position. Amud Beis. Vahalo. Eino dome zmano shalzeh lizmano shalzeh. So we'll say Rebbe said, how can you make a makusher into a pashut? After all, the way we date the shtaros are different by makusher and by a pashut. How so? Pashut, Rebbe said, when it comes to a get, what we call a get pashut, which is just a regular document, melech shana monin lo shana. Shtayim monin lo shtayim. So we'll say the halacha is shtaros were always dated. In addition to having the Jewish date, were also dated in accordance with the year of the monarch, of the particular monarch. Now again, when that's a Jewish king, it's a Jewish king. But the Gemara is over here referring much more to a Gentile king. So they would date their shtaros in accordance, ultimately again, with the year of the reign of the Gentile king. Now we'll say, now watch this. Now the Gemara says over here, by Makusher, so the date of the monarchy that you put in there is the actual date of the monarchy. If the king's reigned 1 year, you put in 1 year. 2 years, 2 years. However, Makusher, when it comes to a get Makusher, Malach Shana Monin Lo Shtayim, Shtayim Monin Lo Gimel. If the king has reigned 2 years, you put 3 years of his reign in the document. If he reigned 1 year, you put in 2 years for his reign. If he reigned 2 years, you put in 3 years for his reign. And I will say, now, what's the logic behind this? Take a look at the Rashbam. The top Rashbam. Alo in zmano shal pashet ki zmano shal makusher. Tilo zmano shal pashet im nichtav b'shana harishon shamad ha-melech in monon lo ela shana shtayim monon lo shtayim ava makusher im malach shana kosven b'shtar shtayim shtayim monon lo shalosh kolomar makdimin lo shana shariminak ha'uma kidlakamon lahaktim lemelech shana. Both sides. What the Gemara points out over here is the following. The way by the Gentile nations is that the way they would date their documents was always by adding on a year to the reign of the sitting monarch. Now, what was the point of doing that? He says, V'shema l'kabad ha'melech hayu osim kilomar kvar hechzik b'malchuso shtei shanim. So, listen to this. The idea was, it was like a bracha to the monarch. So, if the king only reigned 2 years, you would date the shtaros in the third year of the king. So by always adding on to a year of the king, it was like a bracha to the malchus. That's how Gentiles used to date their documents. Now, under normal circumstances, Rebbe said, when we date our documents, we don't date like that. Rather, we just go ahead and use the actual year of the reign of the monarch. So the Gemara suggests now, or I should say, Rebbe suggests now that Lemaisa herein lies one of the distinctions between a Makusher and a Get Pashut. By Get Pashut, we use the actual year of the reign of the monarch. By Get Makusher, we use what we call the Gentile system of dating shtaros, which is by adding on an extra year to the reign of the monarch. Now, we'll say, Why would Chazal institute a different kind of date by Mekusher than they would by a get pashut? So the Rashbam says over here, the Chachamim tiknu lichto be Mekusher k'minag ha'uma, kadei losos chilukim harbei, b'chumrus be Mekusher, mishum takonas ha'kohanim ha'kapdoni k'damrin ala'el, kadei shlo yei noach l'garish n'shoseh. The Bible says, the goal is to make the get part, to make the Mekusher as complicated as possible. That's the goal. Make it as complicated as possible. So how do you make it as complicated as possible? So we saw, you make the folds, you go out and you change, and by changing the dating, by not making it a normal dating of shtaros, you just make it more complicated. Anything we could do to make it more complicated slows down the process, and of course our vested interest is getting this shtar, or this get, to take longer. So the Gemara says the following. So what happens? So the Gemara says there's a problem. Now, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said, "Rabbi, say that what happens if you have a get mekusher and you accidentally signed the witnesses on the front part of the shtar." So what's the halacha? Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel said it's okay. Why is it okay? Because lemaisa you could just make it into a get mekusher. Right? Excuse me, I'm sorry. You can make it into a get pashut. So even though get mekusher normally signed on the back of the shtar, if they accidentally signed on the front of the shtar, it's fine. You could just make it into a get pashut. To which the Gemara says, to which Rebbe says, here's the problem. Bezimnin, Rabbi Osai Kof Samech Dalad Amud Beis, fourth line down. Bezimnin, to Yosef Minei Zuzi B'Mekusher. Supposed to listen to this. Imagine the following situation. I lend Reuven $1,000, and I lent it to him using a get mekusher. Now remember, if I gave it to him with a get mekusher, so let's say again, remember, get mekusher is dated how? 1 year ahead, meaning 1 year ahead of the king's actual reign. So let's say I lent Reuven $1,000 in the second year of the king. We dated the shtar, of course, what? The third year of the king. The Rebbe says, so we're writing a mekusher, so we did it like a mekusher. But then what ended up happening? What ended up happening is the witnesses ended up signing on the front end of the document. So we said, okay, you know what? Instead of drafting a new document, we'll just make it into what? Make it into what? We'll make it into a pashut. Just make it into a pashut. So I'll say, so watch how this could be abused. So the Gemara says, so I lend Reuven $1,000. What happens? Reuven comes to me a few months later, before the due date of the debt, and goes in and repays the debt. Now, under normal circumstances, when you go ahead and you repay, if you're a borrower and you repay the debt, what do you get when you repay the debt? You get the loan document, you get the shtar, because you don't want the lender to be able to take it again from you. So what happens? I say, you know what, Reuven, I'm sorry, I lost the shtar. Now, I'm lying. You're going to say, I'm trying to abuse this situation. So what happens? I say, I lost it, I'm so sorry. Because of Leitavra. But I go out and say, you know what, I'll write you a receipt indicating that you paid the debt. So what happens, Rabbi Osai? Remember, how was this shtar dated? This shtar is dated a year in advance. When it comes to the end of the third year of the reign of the king, which is the date stated in the shtar itself, Mashrilei Pashit. Now I'll present it as a get Pashit, as a regular Pashit document. Va'amalei, and I'll come through and try to collect again. Va'amalei, Hani Hashta Dias Visminoi. And let me say again, I'll say, listen, you owe me money. Well, see, here what's happening over here? What Rebbe's saying to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is the following. You're saying that you can make a mekusher into a pashut comes with the ability to take advantage of the borrower. Because the Maaseh Rabbah, remember again, the dating is different. A mekusher is dated a year ahead, right? A pashut is dated with the actual reign. If you're telling me that you can go ahead and you can take a mekusher and you can make it into a pashut, then that means Rabbah say, if Reuven comes to pay back the money he owes me, and I tell him, so I don't have the document, but I'll write you a receipt that says he repaid the debt, fine, repay the debt. Then what happens, Rabbi Osai? A year later, in the actual third year of the king, I can go ahead and produce that document and say, Reuven, you owe me money. And now, what is Reuven going to say? Reuven's going to say, I paid you. I said, no, you paid me for that previous debt, but you now owe me this new debt, right? Because even look at the date of the shofar. That date of the shofar was the second year of the king. This document is dated in the third year of the king. So you see that you owe me new monies. To which the Gemara says, so Rebbe is raising this contradiction to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. You're claiming that you can make a mekusher into a pashut, ultimately again is fraught with problems. to which the Gemara says Kasavar. No, Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel says in kos and shover. We'll say in kos and shover means that we do not write receipts. We'll say, now when we say in kos, now we're going to see this sugi later on, where we say we don't write receipts is another way of saying, Rabbi Osai, that a borrower is not obligated to pay back the debt unless, of course, what? The lender could produce the document. If the lender can't produce the document and hand back that document to the borrower and allow the borrower to either hold on to or destroy that document, the borrower is not obligated to repay. Why? Because repayment under those circumstances opens up the borrower to the possibility that he may be taken advantage of. So, umi baki Rebbe Makusher, but ask the Gemara, I don't understand. Is Rebbe such an expert in a get Makusher that he can start asking questions and trying to refute Rabbi Hanina ben Gamliel? After all, v'ha'ha hu Makusher, the asli kamei de Rebbe. Listen to this, Rabbi Osai. There was a particular get Makusher that came before Rebbe. V'ama Rebbe, shtar mu'ucher zeh. Rebbe says, this document is a shtar mu'ucher. Now, also, we learned about this. Shtar mu'ucher means a post-dated document. Rebbe Osai, now, is a shtar mu'ucher kosher? The answer is yes. Because the only person taking a risk in that is either the lender, right, is the lender. If he chooses to take that risk, that's his. But the point I will say is that Rebbe sees a get makusher, and apparently Rebbe wasn't such an expert in get makusher, because he's saying that the document is a mu'ucher, meaning it's not a mu'ucher. Rather, what Rebbe, so we just established, that's the way a get makusher is dated. It's dated a year in advance. But Amar Zunin, the Rebbe and Zonin, Rebbe say, who's the name of a Tana, said to Rebbe, Kach min haga shal umazu. So Zonin says to Rebbe, no Rebbe, you're misunderstanding. This is the way that the Gentile nations date their documents. Malach shana, monin lo shtayim. Shtayim, monin lo shalosh. So Zonin says to Rebbe, the way that it works is the Gentile nations, they always add on a year to the king's current reign. And by doing that, and therefore again, forget Mukusher, that is how we date our documents as well. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Basar deshama mizonin savra. So we'll say, so Rebbe became more proficient after having this lesson from Zonin. Fine. Haushtara davakasav vei vishnas ploni arkon. So we'll say there was a particular document that surfaced, and the way it was written, we'll say this, Rashman points out that this was a get pashat. This was a regular document. And the way it was dated was Bishnas Ploni Arkon. In the year Ploni, whatever the name of the king was, Arkon. So the Gemara says, what does this mean? Now take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Tavikasav Ve Bishnas Ploni Arkon. See, if you go across in the Rashbam, it's about 10 lines down. Tavikasav Ve Bishnas Ploni Arkon. Lava Ploni Mi Ploni. So also the way the document read was, in the year of so-and-so Arkon, Reuven borrowed from Shimon. Below Havakasav Bay Kama Shanim Lamalhuso Shaosamelach, Orishona, Oshnia, Oshlishus. So we'll say all the document said was it was in the year of so and so King Arkon. But it did not say what year of the reign it was. Was it year one? Was it year two? Was it year three? So says the Gemara. Amrabi Khanina. Yibadek emasai amad arkon ba'arkonuse. So Rabbi Hanina says, we have to check when arkon began ba'arkonuse. Look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says again, Yibdok emasai amad arkon ba'machuso, ki b'shan l'rishon r'shon machuso nichtav shtar zeh, u'me'ahi shas atarpe ba'li chobos l'kuchos. So Rabbi Hanina essentially says, arkon is the Lashon for the first year of the reign of a king. And we'll say, why does Arkon mean the first year of the reign of the king? So if you go back to the previous Rashbam, the Rashbam says, Arkon zeh melech, u'bishana rishona koron lo Arkon, k'dlakaman lefi sha'ata matukan hu kimo orech olo orech. So we'll say, the idea over here is, in the first year of a king, they would call the king Arkon. Arkon means what? Like orech, long. The idea being, that in the first year of his reign, they would call him Arkon as a bracha. A bracha that you should have orech yomim, arichus yomim, right, that you should go ahead and have longevity on the throne. You should be zocha to a continuous monarchy. So Rabbi Hanina says, therefore again, if that lashon in the shtar means that this shtar was written in the first year of the reign of the king. So the Gemara says, I have a dilma de orech malchusei. I don't understand, maybe Maybe Arkon means that the king has been serving as monarch for a long time. So maybe it's not like an anticipatory bracha that he should have a long reign. Maybe just the opposite. It's reflected that he has enjoyed a long reign already. So Rav Hoshea says, this is the minhag of this nation. Rav Hoshea says, now Pashas, when they say umazu, umazu usually historically refers to one of two nations. Either Greece, well, one of three nations. Babel, Greece, or Rome. And depending ultimately who's talking, you can be able to tell historically which particular nation the time is. So we'll say, Bepashtos over here, as we're going to see in just a moment, they're talking about Greece. To which the Gemara says, Korin lo, Shana Rishona, Korin lo Arkon. In the first year of the king's reign, they would give him the title Arkon. Shnia, Korin lo Digon, right? In the second year, they would call him Digon. That was the title they gave him for a second year of his reign. To which the Gemara says, Vidilma, Avuri Avru, Vahadra Akamu. Well, maybe, perhaps, the king was king, then they removed him, and then they reestablished him. The verse of the Amram Yirmiyah, Hahu Arkon Digon Karle. We'll say if the king was king, then, I guess, deposed, and then reinstated, they would give him the title of Arkon Digon. Ten Rabban. So we'll say the Gemara, now once the Gemara starts talking about these different types of names that refer to different durations of time, the Gemara gives some other examples of this. Tanra Abanan, Hareini Nazir. So we'll say, let's say a person says he's a Nazir. I will say, now understand, Stam Nazir Naziros is 30 days. But the Gemara is dealing now with the situation where a person says Hareini Nazir, and they add an additional word. And depending on the nature of that word, determines how many durations of Naziros are taking upon themselves. Sareini Nazir, Sumcho Somer Hina Achos. We'll say if a person says, I am a Nazir, Hina. Hina, these are all Greek derivative words. Hina means he's accepting upon himself one duration of Nazirus. One 30-day duration of Nazirus. Digon, if he says, Harini Nazir, Digon, then what? Shtaim, he's taking upon himself two durations of Nazirus. Trigon, Gimel. He says, I'm a Nazir Trigon. Then Rabbi Hosea takes upon himself three periods of Naziros, meaning three 30-day periods. Tatrigon, I'm a Nazir Tatrigon. Four periods of Naziros. Pentigon, I'm a Nazir Pentigon. Five periods of Naziros. So we'll say, see, this suggests a flow from the previous discussion, ultimately, again, from the discussion about the kings. Now we see Naziros. One more application of his Ten Rabbanon. Bayis Ogul. We'll say if you have a round house, or digon, trigon, pentagon, or a house, we'll say with two corners, or a house with three corners, or a house with five corners, eino mitame benegoim. We'll say such a home is not susceptible to tumas negoim, is not susceptible to tsaras habayis. Tetrigon mitame benegoim. However, if the home has four corners, then what we'll say, it is susceptible to tumas tsaras. What's the reason for this? Where do we know this from? The Tanur Rabbanan. Huh? Because we learned above. Sorry. The Tanur Rabbanan, because we learned, Lemalo Omer Kir Kiros Shtayim, Lemato Omer Kir Kiros Shtayim. So we'll say, what the Gemara is pointing out over here is the following. That by Tzaras Habayis, the Torah could have used the Lashon Kir, wall. But instead it uses the plural Lashon of Kiros, walls, plural. And it does that twice. So we'll say, so the minimum number of kiros times two is how much? Is four. So from here you see, we'll say, that in order for a home to contract tsaras habayis, it has to what? It has to have at least four walls. Okay. So we'll say, listen to this. Now we're going to get into some really beautiful gemara. I mean, this has all been beautiful, magnificent. This is even more beautiful. So gemara says the following. Ha'uma kusher, dasla kamedu Rebbe. Both listen to this. There was a get makusher that came before Rebbe. Va'amar Rebbe, Rebbe said, both we actually quoted this story on Shabbos. Va'amar Rebbe, ein zman bazeh. Rebbe looked at the document and he said, there's no date in this document. Amar le Rebbe Shimon b'Rebbe le Rebbe. So Rebbe Shimon, the son of Rebbe, said to Rebbe, Shema ben ksharav muvla. Maybe the date is literally swallowed up in the folds. Remember, again, a get mukusher is folded up. So Rabbi Shimon said to his father, maybe the date is there, it's just swallowed up in some of the folds. Palye, so they opened up, they untied the shtar. Vichazye, they looked inside the shtar. Hadar, says Bechazye, Hadar, Chaza, Bey. I'm sorry. Palye Bechazye. So they opened up, they untied the knots of the shtar. They opened it up, and sure enough, they saw the dates. Hadar Chaza Bei Rebbe Bebishos. So let's see, if you take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment, it's five lines up from the bottom, and the wide lines. Chaza Bei Bebishos, Kasaver Shuk Hasvo, Ubertsono, Lohayu Osin Makusha Elapacha Shetombo. So we'll say, so after this episode, Rebbe kind of looked a little bit disapprovingly or disparagingly at Rebbe Shimon. Now, what's happening over here? The Rashbam points out, Rebbe did not like get makushers, right? He did not like gitay makusher. He didn't like it. He didn't like it to Moshe because, number one, they're complicated. And number two, if you really don't know what you're doing, it's easy to make mistakes. So Rebbe looked at Rebbe Shimon a bit disapprovingly, thinking that Rebbe Shimon was the one who wrote this get makusher, and was upset at him. Don't write these kind of documents. So Moshe, watch this. So Chazi Bei Rebbe Bishus, Amalei, Rebbe Shimon responds to Rebbe, Lav ana kasavte. So Rebbe, I didn't write it. Rabbi Yehuda Chaita kasve. It was Rabbi Yehuda Chaita who wrote it. So we'll say Rabbi Shimon therefore goes in and says to his father, to Rebbe, I didn't write this, but rather again it was Rabbi Yehuda Chaita. Amar lei kelecha mi lashon harazeh. So Rebbe gives Rabbi Shimon Moser. Why are you saying lashon hara? Why are you saying lashon hara? In other words, what? All you needed to say was what? Was what? Someone else wrote. I didn't. What wasn't me? It wasn't me, but there was absolutely no need for you to out. Or as well say, let's be clear. It's not illegal, meaning the individual didn't do anything wrong. Rebbe just happened to really feel that people should not write to get mokosher. It's just, it opens yourself up for an incredible amount of mistakes. See, when he thinks Rebbe Shimon does it, all Rebbe Shimon has to say is, it wasn't me. You don't have to say it was Rebbe Yehuda Chaita. So therefore, Rebbe tells Rebbe Shimon, you spoke Lashon Hara, and you spoke Lashon Hara unnecessarily. I'll say another story. Zimnin. Have a Yosef Kame. I will say one time again, Rabbi Shimon was sitting before Rabbi, Vikapasik Sidra Besefer Tehillim. And what happens? And Rabbi Shimon was saying Tehillim. He was saying Tehillim, Amar Rabbi, Kama Miyushar Ksavze. So Rabbi said to Rabbi Shimon, what a beautiful Sefer Tehillim you have. Amar Lei, to which Rabbi Shimon responded, Lab Anakasavte. I did not write this Sefer Tehillim. Yehuda Chaita Kasve. It was Yehuda Chaita who wrote the Sefer Tehillim. Amarle, Kielecha mi Lashon Hara. Rebbe said to Rebbe Shimon, stop speaking Lashon Hara. So says the Gemara, I don't understand. Bishlam Ahasam Ika Lashon Hara. I understand in the first case, right, by the get Makusher, this Lashon Hara, because Rebbe tried to preach, don't write Gitei Makusher, don't write them, and yet, again, Rabbi Yehuda Chaita is writing them, so I understand why it's Lashon Hara for Rabbi Shimon to say Rabbi Yehuda Chaita wrote the get Makusher. Elahacha, my Lashon Hara Ika. Rebbe say over here by the Sefer Tehillim, so why is there Lashon Hara? Why is Lashon Hara? Mishum de Rav Dimi. Because Rebbe say this goes in accordance to Rav Dimi. What does Rav Dimi say? The Tani Rav Dimi Achud Rav Safra Liolam Al Yisaper Adam B'Tavasa Shal Chaveiro. I will say, it is important never to speak excessive good about someone. Why? Shemitoch Tavaso Ba Lidei Ra'aso. Because I will say, we all know how this works. Sometimes when the conversation begins on a good level, what ends up happening? What ends up happening is Lashon Hara ends up happening. Sometimes when the conversation even begins with singing the praises of someone, first of all, you never know who you're speaking to. You never know how that other person feels about this individual. And so the more you end up speaking about someone, even if the intention is to do it in a positive way, it's possible that it could descend into something negative. We'll say, which is an incredible yisur. Essentially what the Gemara is saying is, don't talk about people. Does this mean you shouldn't compliment? Does this mean you shouldn't praise? No, chas v'shalom. And by the way, the Maharsha actually points out that the exception to this is tzaddikim, he brings down. That by tzaddikim, there's dafka and inyan to speak about tzaddikim, so we can learn from tzaddikim. But in general, when speaking about other people, sometimes it's kedai to limit the amount we speak about other people, even if, lemaisa, I'm saying good, Because the more you speak about people, the greater the statistical probability that you'll come to say something negative. And Rabbi say, if we're honest, we've all had conversations like this, where again, we've started out speaking nicely or trying to praise someone, and because you never know who you're speaking to, you never know ultimately, again, what your circumstances are or who it is that you're speaking about. So Lemais, again, you never know what the reaction ultimately is going to be. Therefore, says Rav Dimi, better not to speak excessively positive about anyone, lest you come ultimately to speak about Lashon Hara. Therefore, again, Rebbe says to Rebbe Shimon, don't start praising Rebbe Yehuda Chaita's skill as a self-writing the Sefer Tehillim, because if you praise him too much, you may come ultimately again, or someone else who is in earshot may come to say something negative. Well, so we have to stop over here. I just want to mention, it's kedai to be here at the beginning of the shir tomorrow morning, because this gemara that we're doing at the beginning of the daf is incredibly, magnificently beautiful gemara, just about Lashon Hara, other things. So it's kedai. Again, we'll start regular schedule tomorrow morning, 5:45, Gan Emuna, 6 a.m. Daf Yomi. Hopefully, the weather will be a little bit better. Emir Tzashem. We'll stop here.